Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Lisa. How are you?
Oh, I'm exhausted. How are you?
Same. I mean, there's a lot going on. Why don't you go first?
Well, I mean, I think it's just, first of all, lots going on in the world and lots of, daily stressors or daily, just seems like things are going on and everything, just lots of things going on. But, and then our own, both of us, I know our own personal lives, that we've got kids that have a lot of stuff going on. I've got two kids that are seniors that are getting ready to go to college. So that's been, that's another thing that's taking up space in my brain. And then it's marathon season. So we have so many runners that are doing all the races every weekend. And it's been really exciting. And we also have a lot of new runners coming in who are starting to think about spring races. So on our Run Farther and Faster front, it's been great, but it's been I think this time of year is just really, like I said, it's a culmination of a lot of people's training. It's the beginning of other people's training. We just had today the culmination of our Montgomery College program. That was a great program that we did this year through Montgomery College's wellness program. And we have coached at Montgomery College for many, many, many years. That was actually one of our earliest kind of group programs that we did. And we returned this year with a virtual program, but we did celebrate with them today. They did a campus turkey trot on their track and had a great number of people turn out, including a lot of the people who did our training program. So it was really nice to see them in person. It was a beautiful day here. So again, culmination of a lot of programs and a lot of training, the start of some other training, which also makes me remember to mention that our rosters are filling up. We are full for November and December. We are actually scheduling calls with people to talk about January coaching. So if there's anybody out there listening who is thinking about talking to us about coaching for spring marathons, particularly Boston, and there are a lot of runners doing Boston that might want to work with us, please contact us soon so we can schedule a call with you for December and save a spot for you in January, because we're trying to plan out we are very careful. We've learned over the years that we need to be careful about how many runners that we take on. It's just you and I, the two of us. And we take a lot of pride in giving very individualized attention to each runner and getting to know every runner. And we've learned that that means there's a limit to how many people we really can take on. So in order to plan for that accordingly, and we want to try to accommodate everybody, but in order to plan appropriately, our roster balance and our how many people we can take on, we've got to know who wants to start with us. So we'd love to hear from you if you are thinking about working with us. We can schedule time to talk, to learn more about you, more about your goals, and you can hear more about us and our coaching, and we can see if we're a good fit and plan accordingly.
Well said. And I just want to ask, for those listening who may be wondering if we're doing a virtual group program this year, we've decided that we are going to stick to individual coaching this year. And that is because we found in the past that we, even when our athletes were in the group program, we wanted to be able to help them individually. And we just found that it was almost as hands-on as our individual coaching. And we decided to just stick to what we know best, to provide the tailored coaching that we love to deliver to our runners. So as a result, if you are training for Boston and you'd like to engage with us, we'd love to talk with you, but we ask that you do it very soon. And we'll schedule a call with you in early December.
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like it's just been, first of all, sorry about the background noise. As usual, whenever we get on this podcast,
super.
So today he's squeaking his toy. So sorry about that, everyone. I was just going to say, I feel like I've been in a whirlwind, and I think a lot of us feel this way this time of year. After Halloween, first of all, October is very busy for a lot of, especially parents. It's just a very busy month academically in school. And if you are parents of a school age student, it's just a crazy month. And then all of a sudden Halloween's over, and then it's holidays and it's trying to squeeze everything in. And I think it's just overwhelming. And I feel this way every year. And I really try to remind myself every year, this feeling is normal, it's temporary, and enjoy it and look at it as a privilege that life is a little crazy, because these are the moments. I sound like a song. These are the moments, but these are the moments we want. These are the moments we live for. They're these important moments. So when they happen, instead of thinking about it like I've got to get through this, think about it, I have the opportunity to enjoy this, and I know this is going to be a crazy week, but it's all good. And when trying, for me, when also trying to balance work with those enjoyable moments and feeling overwhelmed, I always remind myself this time of year, I'm not going to remember the extra hour I worked. I'm going to remember that I attended this opportunity. So when you get an invitation, or when you're thinking about seeing friends you haven't seen in a while, or if you have to attend an event that maybe you're not feeling so great about attending because you have a lot of work to do, I always try to remind myself, I'm going to remember the event, not the extra hour of work I did. It'll get done. So I'm sure there are many people out there feeling this as well. So just my little PSA to remind you that it's totally normal. And if you're feeling this way, so am I.
I love that. That's a great, great perspective. And you have sort of a big milestone around this time of year. It's been exactly 1 year since you experienced your knee injury and surgery. So I thought it would be a good time to kind of catch up on where you are and how you're feeling. And we haven't talked about it in a little while. And I know people are always asking me how Julie's doing. So how is Julie doing?
I'm doing okay. I tore my ACL in my basement on November 12th, and we are recording this on November 16th. I was very aware of that day on November 12th. And I look back on this year with admittedly some resentment. You know, I've lost a year of running, and that's hard. I've also looked back on this year with a lot of joy, because I've learned a lot about myself through this major injury, and I've developed a lot of strength mentally and physically in areas that I didn't have before. And while I didn't ask for this injury, I'm certainly grateful for those opportunities. It's not cliche, it's true. So as many people know, when I tore my ACL, I had surgery on December 12th, exactly a month later. And I've been working in the gym with my trainer, Lauren, every week, mostly twice a week, where I'm working on getting this leg, both my legs strong, getting my whole body stronger to support this knee. And it's really been a godsend, because I haven't been able to really set any running goals this year as I'd hoped I'd be able to. So being able to make some gains in my strength has helped me tremendously mentally and physically. And I look at this year as sort of two parts. Part one is from surgery to the summer, when my progress was very linear. It was very hard to get back to running. And once I did, I just took off, and I was doing long runs and training for the Last Chance to BQ.2 marathon, which I talked about in a previous episode. And I was doing really well. And then I went away, I went out of town, and it was just too much on my knee, and the travel coupled with walking and standing a lot caused some swelling in August, and I had to have my knee drained in September. And so I look at my recovery in two parts, before having my knee drained and after. And so now I had to sort of start again. I would say after having my knee drained, I went back to walk run. And I went from running, you know, up to 45 miles a week with a long run. That was the top, feeling good, feeling strong, to walk run again in September. And it was really humbling, and it was really hard mentally, because I felt like a failure. And I know it wasn't my fault, but I felt really bad about it, because as I talked about in the previous episode, here I was feeling pretty smug, like, yeah, I got this. And then I could run, I could do all the things, and I couldn't do life. And I didn't realize that until I was on that trip, that my knee couldn't support lots of walking and standing and flying on a plane. And it really humbled me. Not that I needed more humbling, I was already humbled by the ACL tear itself at age 50, but it humbled me some more. And I really have been walking the walk. When I tell people that progress is not linear, I am living that right now. It is not linear. So between the last time I talked about this injury and now, I advanced from walk run to running 3 to 4 days a week. Mostly my runs in the week are between 3, at most 5 miles. And then my long run, I'm now up to 8 miles. And I've been feeling good. I haven't had, knock on wood, any swelling. I've kind of stayed in this place for a while just to absorb the mileage. I'm still doing my strength training. I'm still going to PT every other week. And I feel good. And so I'm going to start gradually increasing my mileage a little bit more. I'm a little scared too, admittedly, but that is where I am right now. And I hope to be able to train for Cherry Blossom in the spring. I think that's a very realistic goal. I'm not trying to do a marathon in the spring. I recognize that's not wise for me. And I'm hopeful that by the time spring hits, I'll be able to race Cherry Blossom in a way that is reflective of my previous fitness. That would be my goal. While also recognizing that I haven't raced a 10-mile race now, and it will be 3 years because I missed Cherry Blossom last year and the year before. So that's where I am. I'm proud to report that I had one race after my knee draining.
I was going to talk about it if you didn't. So.
I wasn't sure if I was going to race because, you know, I raced this summer. I talked about it on the podcast. I was feeling great. I was hitting times that were almost commensurate with my pre-injury times. But after this injury, I didn't run anything faster than my very easy pace mileage. But it was a beautiful day, and I signed up to be present at the Rockville 5K, which was the last race I did last year before I tore my ACL. So I wanted to at least be there. I wasn't sure if I was going to race it, but I decided when I woke up that morning, I felt good, and I decided to take a risk and run it as fast as I could. And that ended up being, I think I ran 7:30s, which is great. And I felt
good enough to be in your age group. First place in your age group.
Yes. I mean, it's all about who shows up, and
no, it doesn't matter. You know, still, it was well-deserved and well-earned. So
thank you. I felt really happy out there. I felt like excited to be in a racing environment. It's hard though. I mean, I will be completely transparent. It's hard to race that race, at that pace for me. I'm used to running the race faster. So it's hard. I tell my runners this all the time, you know, accept the wins, celebrate the wins, but I'm being completely transparent that I really try to do that myself, but sometimes it's hard. And running that race, there was a lot of symbolism that day. It was the last race I ran before everything kind of just blew up. And it's now the first race I'm running after a long hiatus from racing due to having this thing drained. And I'm so pleased that I didn't have any swelling from it. I recovered from it well. And I had a really fun time with you there and all of the runners, and just being in a racing environment and being part of it versus cheering folks on was really refreshing. And that is my plan. I think I'm done with this injury, and you know, the injury is not done with me. I think that's where I am at this point. It's a year. I'm sick of it. I'm so tired of thinking about my knee, and I want to be able to be the runner I was. And I don't know if that's ever going to happen. So I have to sort of rewrite my story and really think about being the runner I can be after an ACL surgery, and accepting who that runner is and not sitting in that what I used to be, because that's part of my story. And now this is part of my story. And I don't want to diminish what's happened to me by trying to get to a place that I may not be able to get to. Maybe I will, but I'm realistic. And I really, my biggest goal is I just want to run. I want to run long-term. I want to stay healthy, and I want to enjoy it. I miss being that runner. And even if that runner isn't the same times I used to have, I want to be part of it. And being at that race, I got a taste of it. I missed it so much. And all I want to do is be back doing the thing I love. And so that's where I am. I don't know if that makes sense, but this is completely unscripted.
Thank you for sharing. I mean, you've always been so candid and open with your experience, which I think really resonates with a lot of people. And I think your reframing also resonates with a lot of people who may be in a different place now for whatever reason than they were 2 years, 5 years, 10 years ago. And I think we see a lot of runners who they struggle with that, with not comparing themselves to what they were 5, 10, whatever, in their pre-now condition. And I think it helps us, and particularly you, I think have developed such a good empathy for people, and good set a very good example for finding joy in running where we are now and where we're moving toward versus where we were in the past. So, I am hopeful for you. My hope for you is that you can get back to running where you're not always thinking about it and worried about it, where you can get back. And, Rachel Miller, our PT, always says, we know when somebody's passed an injury, when it doesn't even cross their mind anymore, when they don't think about it anymore. And that's my hope for you, is that you get to the point where you're like, oh yeah, like I just had a 40-mile week and I didn't worry about my knee, and my knees, like, it just doesn't even come into your mind every time you go out for a run. Like when you went to race last time, is what's going to happen after this? And can I do this? How much can I push? How much should I not? Like, it would be nice for you to be able to get back to a point where you don't have to think about that. So that's my hope for you.
Yeah, I think that's a great goal. And I completely agree with you. I think I am seeing a little glimmer of that, because for the past year, I think about my knee all day, every day, because think about it, if I'm sitting for a while and I stand up, I'm like, oh, it feels weird. Like it's been foreign to me. Like it's taken my body a year to absorb this new knee, or it's not a knee replacement, but I did have an allograft. So it's, it is a foreign object in my knee. And
a new knee. You have a new knee.
I have a new knee. So to your point,
a new structured knee.
Yes. I think I'm thinking about it less. So I think that's a great point. I'm definitely not thinking about it nearly as much as I was before. And so I'm really hopeful with that. And even over the summer, if I stood for long periods of time, it would be achy. And I'm not finding that right now, which is really, really is making me very hopeful. So when I go out for a run, and I've got like a whole warm-up routine I do, which really helps. And I do feel like early in my run, I feel a little bit better than I used to. I used to always feel really tentative early in a run. It would take me a longer time to warm up. And now I'm feeling like I'm easing into it better. And I should add, my easy pace is so easy right now. And I don't care. I have no ego about it, but I'm going to share it with everyone because I think you would be surprised. My easy pace right now is between 10:15 and 10:30. And my warm-up run is usually around 10:45. And I ran my race in 7:30. And that was, I do no speed work. I'm not right now. I don't want to bother with it. I will eventually, but right now it's just miles, easy miles, cycling for cross training and strength training. So I just want to throw that out there for everyone. My easy pace is so much easier than probably most of the listeners listening. And I truly don't think it's impacted my fitness at all. I think what it's done is it's allowed me to recover between my runs, that I'm able to accumulate more mileage each week and build a little bit better. And so for those who are staging a comeback like I am, I would say what's really helped me is to take any ego out of my paces at all and just run to run and not think about it. But I do look at my paces because I'm trying to also keep my heart rate low. So if I see that my heart rate's a little higher, I'm looking at that, saying what's going on. And a lot of times my heart rate gets a little higher in cold weather, and the weather's getting colder. I'm sort of the opposite of a lot of people. I think you are too, Lisa. Yeah. So I'm kind of monitoring that. And also if I don't get enough sleep, it's a little bit higher, but I'm really trying to keep my heart rate well under 150 right now, just not because I'm doing heart rate training, but because it helps me monitor how easy I'm running so I can safely build up my mileage each week and not have a setback like I had before.
Yeah, that's super smart. You've always been very smart about your running, and thanks for sharing that, because I think that really drives home the fact that you just ran a 5K in 7:30 miles, but your training runs are about 3 minutes slower per mile, and you still have that speed and you've done no speed work. So it's, I think what it goes to show is that, you know, runners can reach their potential, even if they're not right. Their training paces have no reflection on what their potential is.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. And I think that's a good transition to talk about, which we wanted to touch on a little bit today too, are some of the observations that we've had, especially from this marathon training cycle, but more generally, like we've been doing this now for 14 years now. We just celebrate our 14-year anniversary. Yay. Happy anniversary, Julie.
Happy anniversary, my love.
Yes. Years just fly by. And next year will be our 15th year. We're going to try to plan some kind of celebration for 15 for the big 1-5. Feels like we just did our 10-year runniversary. But 15 years is coming up. And we've talked about this a lot. And I find myself in calls that we're having with runners and, you know, hearing about their experiences and maybe their frustrations, sort of saying like, well, over 14 years, we've seen these patterns and we've seen what's been successful and what hasn't been successful. And being able to then identify that with people who come to us and say, I've hit a plateau, this is what I'm doing. And we can then say, well, you know, we've seen this over this many years, this is what we've seen kind of general, that generally leads to success, and how we can help, you know, we can help tweak their approach to incorporate that. And we had a lot of kind of observations and sort of our hypotheses play out over the course of this marathon training and marathon race season. And we thought we would talk about it just to share with people sort of our knowledge and what we've seen. It's our observations. We're not, we don't have all the answers. One approach for one person is not always the right approach for another person. And that's why I think it's important that we as coaches look at everyone as an individual, but we see general patterns that emerge. And it's like a lot of times we can see habits or patterns that people are engaging in that we know are going to end badly, that we know are going to be the train wreck. It's like the train wreck's coming and you see it and you say, we know this doesn't end badly. How do we like reroute the train to make it end better? So I thought we'd talk a little bit about the things that have worked, the things that haven't worked, just for people to kind of get a sense of what we've seen over the years, the patterns that we've seen, and one in particular for me this season, especially with COVID, with even now we have a lot of runners who are just getting standard, you know, colds and viruses from the fall, and little injuries, you know, things that come up. There are hiccups along the way. We can't always control that. It's not a runner's fault if they get injured generally, especially if they're following a training plan and they're doing everything right, but they happen. And how runners manage that really does have an effect on their long-term success. And what happens a lot of times is runners get sick or runners get injured and they're really, really afraid to take time off. We say, okay, let's take off 3 days. What do you mean 3 days? I'm gonna like lose a ton of fitness if I don't run. And we feel that, like I feel that when I don't run for a certain number of days, like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna totally get out of shape. Like I'm gonna lose all my training gains. But what we've seen is that the runners who really do take that time off to really give their body a chance to recover from sickness or from an injury, let their body put all their energies into that, they do come back stronger, and they do that break, that little hiatus to get better, doesn't affect their training. We have a runner who had to take a couple breaks this season, one for COVID, one for an injury, and had to take some time off, which was really difficult and challenging, but they did and came back to run a PR, a Boston qualifying time at their goal marathon on not a ton of, you know, the last sickness was really just, I think maybe a month before the race. It wasn't like they had a ton of time to regroup after, but they really let their bodies totally recover. And they came back and it, you know, in the end they said, oh, I was so afraid those breaks were going to, you know, derail my goals, but they didn't. And it was really because they had taken that time off. And on the other hand, we see runners who, again, understandably struggle with like saying, you've got to take a few days off. We always have said this like way early in our training, we learned this and we've said this a lot, is it's better to take a day or two or three off now than 3 weeks later, or more time later, because you didn't take those couple days off. And so it's hard for them. And what happens is they get stuck in this kind of like trap or this downward spiral, like where they can't get a hole. They're digging a hole where they can't get out of it, where maybe they get a virus or sick. And then they say, well, I feel better now, I'm going to go out and run, but their body isn't better. And then they get worse. Then it's worse. Like the next day, the sickness is worse. And then they have to take a whole, they can't run, physically cannot run, because they can't even get out of bed for a week. And, you know, it stretches something that could have been a 2 or 3 or 4 day break into a 2 week or a 3 week or a 4 week break. And then that really can have an effect on training. So that's one thing I saw this cycle, was that the runners who really trusted that rest was going to be best and took that time, it didn't affect their outcomes at all. They all had really good, even if they had to take time off during a cycle, it's like you almost forget that they had to take that time off. It did not affect their outcomes. They all had really good outcomes. Whereas those who may have prolonged their recovery from whatever they were dealing with, it did eat into their, you know, it got up to their marathon time. Like it actually, you know, stretched up until race day. And that's what we want to avoid. We always say getting somebody to the start line healthy is like the first step in reaching their goals. Because if you don't get to the start line healthy and 100%, it's much harder to reach your goals. So that's one observation that I had. So I'm just curious to hear, you know, what, if anything, you know, what you observed and something that maybe, you know, also you've seen consistently over the years.
I would say mine is something we've said a lot, and it won't be a surprise, but my most successful master's runners are the ones who run their easy runs the easiest. I have a runner who has this season consistently hit PRs in every distance. And he, first of all, I think one of the things that he does well is he really loves the process and he just enjoys running and doesn't take it too seriously. So while he has goals, he really treats it like a hobby and has fun. And when he doesn't have a good workout, he doesn't internalize it as a symbol of his fitness. He's just like, oh, that wasn't so great today, I must have been tired. It's not a big deal. But his easy paces consistently are in 10:30 easily. Every time he runs easy, long run easy, shorter runs, 10:30. And his most recent 5K he did, he was, I think he ran like a 21:12. So, you know, like 6:50 pace. So what does that say? It says again that if you are able to set your ego aside and run a really comfortable, easy pace while still doing speed work, which he does diligently, you will actually get faster. And I will add, I saw something recently, a running coach who has somewhat of a prolific Instagram account. Maybe he was just trying to be different, but he was sharing all these things, saying that don't listen to the coaches that talk about 80-20, because if you always run your easy runs easier, you're just going to get slower. And it frustrated me because I was reading what he was saying, and I think he's a pretty well-respected guy, but I just don't agree, because I'm seeing this all the time, especially with people who've been running for years. The only change they make when they start working with us, everything else is the same, is they're running their easy runs easier, and then all of a sudden they're hitting times that they haven't hit in years. So, I mean, maybe the science doesn't support it, but for us, the data supports it. So that is my observation. Can I say a second observation before I forget?
Yes.
Second one I've noticed is, I have noticed this season especially that the runners who aren't super hung up on their time goal, but are instead focused more on a process goal. Like, I really want to feel good for this race. My goal, while I really want to do well, my goal is to finish strong and not feel like I'm dying at the end of the marathon. Or I originally had a goal to BQ, but you know what? I'm feeling like that pace is not quite the right pace for my fitness. So my goal is, instead, I want to hit a sub 3:30, but most importantly, my goal is I just want to hit a time that is reflective of my fitness right now. So it's like having sort of more general goals for time and process goals for execution create a happier runner. And of course, when we had our podcast episode with Brad Stahlberg, this definitely aligns with his expertise and advice with respect to expectations and reality. And, you know, if you're training at paces that reflect that you can absolutely hit a BQ, there's no shade in saying, I want a BQ and this is what I want to do and these are my goals. But if it's a place where it's not making you happy or fulfilled, but instead your whole running is about hitting that BQ, that to me, from my observations, creates a lot of stress and anxiety around your running. And then of course that creates a spiral where if your running is stressing you out, how can running be a stress reliever? And if running isn't a stress reliever, how are you relieving your stress when you're doing other things throughout your day that are stressful? So observation is setting appropriate goals, setting process goals, and making sure that you keep your running as a hobby, not a job, has really, for me, shown a lot of success among the runners we coach.
Yeah, that's a good segue too into my other observation is the runners that we've seen that have had something very stressful happen in life, that a new stress. Like, you know, we have lots of runners who have general stress. Like, we all have a lot of stress in life generally. And like you said, running is a stress relief. So that's what we use it for. But have had something happen with a job, with a family member, with, you know, trying to go back to school, some big kind of stressor in their lives that has nothing to do with running. It really affects their running. And we've heard this before. We've talked about this with guests on our podcast. Carrie talked about it, I think, on our last, whatever it was, our last podcast or two podcasts ago. Our body can't differentiate stress. So good stress and bad stress, it's still stress to the body. And we think of running as good stress, but what we see is that when it comes to marathon training specifically, I think it's, you know, a different level if you're training for a 5K or 10K or even a half marathon. But when you're training for a marathon specifically, your body is under an exponentially higher amount of stress just with the long runs and with the mileage and the workouts and all of that. And if you have something going on in your life that is also very stressful, it makes it really hard to have your optimal performance. Can you run a marathon? Sure. Is it going to be your best result? Probably not. And that has nothing to do with you or with your abilities. It has to do with your body's ability to only handle so much. So what we've seen and what we do a lot with our runners is when we find out, and that's why it's important for us to know what's going on in our runners' lives outside of running. And when we see that they've got something really stressful, a lot of times we'll say like, hey, maybe we want to think about a goal other than a marathon. Like maybe we want to put this marathon off for another time. This is not maybe the right time to do a marathon, to train for a marathon. And we get a lot of pushback. No, I need this for my stress. Like, this is my sanity. We get it. You need running. Like, running is absolutely great, but maybe training for a marathon is not the right time. So I think that what I would take away from that, and this has been consistent over our 14 years of coaching, is every time we see a runner who just has a lot of other things going on in their life, it makes it really hard for them to train well for and perform well for a marathon. So my advice would be, if you know that you've got a lot of stuff going on in your life, even if it's like good stress, even if it's like you're in a new school program and you're trying to balance school and family and or it's a difficult stress. You have, you know, some challenges at work or with family that are really taking up a lot of your mental space and that are really causing you a lot of stress. Think about whether training for a marathon specifically fits into, you know, the bigger picture, if it's going to be the best time for you. And now look, if you're running a marathon is just, you know, your way of coping with stress and you're not worried about your time performance or, you know, an outcome goal, then maybe it's okay, but it's still a lot of stress on your body. And we see more, I think, more injuries and more bodies breaking down because they just can't handle the stress. So we've been talking to a lot of people for, you know, fall for spring marathons. And I've actually said to a few of them, told me like, oh yeah, I've got all this other stuff going on and I don't know, you know, it's a lot, really stressful. So I decided I'm going to train for a marathon. I've actually said like, well, maybe do you want to think about something, you know, doing something that's not quite a marathon yet, because it's a lot of stress and steering them toward other goals. So that's just another observation that I had this season. We had a lot of runners who had a lot of stressful things going on. And I think as a result, you know, maybe didn't have the best training cycle that they could have.
I think that that's an excellent point. And the same, I mean, I really appreciate runners who are willing to listen to suggestions. I think sometimes folks are so wrapped up in the marathon as being an indicator that you are training for something important, as if you were, as if a different distance is somehow less than, and that's not the case at all. I mean, training for anything takes time and it takes thought, and it's really a great thing to have a physical goal, especially during stressful times, but making sure that goal is appropriate is really important as well. So I've had many conversations with runners over this cycle who were training for a marathon and then decided to switch the half because of a big event that suddenly popped up, or because they just found that their training wasn't going according to plan. And rather than looking at that as some type of failure, which it is not, instead looking at it as, okay, this is what is happening right now, and I want to make sure that my running is enhancing my life rather than causing stress to my life. So I'm going to switch the half. And I had a runner who recently did that, and she was so happy that she switched the half. I think sometimes a coach or a third party, whether it's a coach or a running friend or a family member, just looking at it, zooming out and looking at your training and saying, hey, why are you doing this marathon? How about the half? And kind of pause and say, you know what? I didn't even think about that, but you're right. I think sometimes we're so wrapped up in our own sort of running little bubble that we tend to not think about training for anything but a marathon. And there are so many great options out there to train for besides a marathon. It's not the end all be all. And to that end, back to the Boston thing, it's also okay to not train for a BQ. Like I really appreciated the runner who, that was the goal. When this runner came to us, that was the goal. And slowly but surely, the goal shifted. And you know what? Huge PR. The runner had a huge PR. And I very much believe that PR never would have happened if that runner kept the BQ goal, because the stress of that goal would have caused a complete derailment during the race. And instead, they were able to shift the goal and say, you know what, I'm doing this. I'm going to have a massive PR. And then from this race performance, I'll be able to chip away at this PR and set my next goal. So looking at things more globally rather than isolated, sort of looking at your training plan for this race, instead zoom out and think of your training as cumulative. And if you switch the half, it's no big deal because you can train for a marathon for your next training cycle. And you've already set yourself up really nicely for that. There's no time limit. And
right. It's a process.
It's a process.
And we always tell people who come to us, we do get a lot of people who come to us to say like, oh, I want to BQ. And we say, all right, okay, well, that's a problem. It's not like something you order and then you just go out and do it at your next race. Like, and we have runners who are still chipping away and they're making progress and they're taking pride in that progress. So I think that's a really important point to make. I also want to mention, I think something else that kind of came to the surface this season, but we've seen it before too, is that there are no rules as to what constitutes a successful training cycle for a marathon. So, you know, I think that the standard quote unquote knowledge or rules, like, well, you have to get in a certain number of 20 milers and you have to have a certain number of mileage per week. And it has to be a certain number of weeks training cycle. And you have to do a certain number of marathon pace miles in a run. That is not, you know, that when we've learned this over the years as coaches, we, you know, started this 14 years ago in a coaching certification course, which was wonderful and amazing basis of knowledge. But we learned a lot of rules that we have learned over the years that are good guidance, but you've got to look at them from, you know, an individualized perspective. But, you know, we have a lot of runners who think they need to hit a certain number of 20 mile runs in a training cycle. Now, first of all, let's just say 20 miles is just a nice round number, because if you're in Europe and you're doing it by kilometers, you're probably doing 35 kilometers or 30 kilometers. That's not 20 miles round. It's just, we like round numbers. So we get set on this, I need to do a certain number of 20 mile runs. So some people, that may take 4 or 5 hours. That is a lot of time on your feet. And one thing I have learned over the years, Julie, and I think you have too, is it's like nothing good happens after midnight. Nothing good happens after 3.5 hours on your feet. I really feel like, and this was just solidified this training cycle. It really was for me, because, you know, after 3.5 hours on anyone's feet, I don't care how fast of a runner you are, how good of a runner you are, 3.5 hours on your feet. And I think the kind of the rule that we've read and that I've seen in studies is 3 hours, but, or even 2.5 hours, but after 3.5 hours, your body is breaking down. Anybody's body is breaking down. So if you are a runner who can't get to 20 miles in 3.5 hours, do not worry about it. Now, I know people are going to say, well, but my marathon's going to take me 5 hours and my longest run's only been 3.5 hours. How am I going to do that? Your cumulative fitness is going to get you there. But if you go out and you try to do 1 or 2 or 3 runs that are going to take you 5 hours, your body cannot recover from that in time to get out and do your additional training runs. And you're going to then, your body's going to break down before you even get to the start line. So I think it's hard for runners to kind of distance themselves from that. And they see it on social media, or they see it in articles, or they see it out there and they say, well, all these other runners are doing X number of 20 mile runs, or they're running these paces to hit and they're targeting this finish time, or they're training for 16 weeks for a marathon. Or so I think it's hard for people to gain the mental confidence is what suffers, but I think it's really helpful and important for us as coaches to not be beholden to any of those rules, and to hopefully help our runners understand that you can be successful even if you don't hit those traditional milestones that you think are part and parcel of a marathon training plan.
And to that end, with respect to rules apply to everyone differently because everyone is different. We're not on as much as we'd love this to be the case. We all as human beings are not on a level playing field. Some people obviously have a much higher VO2 max, better neuromuscular capability, more strength, more power. And as hard as one runner may work to get to the level of the other runner, of course, not all of us can be professional runners, elite runners. There's a reason that certain people out there are winning races and making money off of it. And there are reasons why other folks are hobby joggers. And wherever you fall on that continuum, you absolutely should train to your potential. But I think sometimes we get caught up in looking at what someone else is doing, whether in person or on social media, and saying, well, they're a master's runner. For example, if you look at someone who's your age, you say, oh, well, they're a master's runner and this is what they're doing and that worked for them, so I'm going to do the same thing. And when you do the same thing, it may not, your body may not respond in the same way, but that doesn't mean you're not doing well in your own running. It just means that certain stimuli affect you differently because we are all different. And that's why running is fun. It's a competitive sport. We race each other. If we're all on a level playing field and theoretically follow the exact same training plan, then theoretically we all should race the same times. We don't. That's because we're all made differently. And as a result, we all absorb our training differently. We all respond to our training differently, and we respond to elements outside of our training differently. So when you toe the start line and you look to the person to your right and the person to your left, know that everyone's coming from a different place, and know that what works for them may not work for you. And again, that doesn't mean you're doing anything bad. So to that end, when we talk about these patterns, for some people, it really works for them to do a really brief marathon buildup. For some people, a briefer marathon buildup actually serves them better because they're not as cooked when they get to the start line. They're fresher, maybe they're prone to injury, and having that briefer buildup will allow them to finish the race strong and get to the start line healthy. Whereas other folks, they may need a much longer buildup. Maybe they don't have as much cumulative mileage under them. But if you're looking at what those other folks are doing and you're saying, oh, well, it looks like you need about 6 months to train for a marathon. No, you don't. And most people listening to this podcast know this already, but don't feel that you're doing something wrong because your training cycle is shorter. Don't feel that you're doing something wrong because you haven't done as many long runs as the person on Instagram who's posting every week about their long runs. Don't feel that you're doing something wrong because you only, quote unquote, do speed work once a week versus 2 or 3 times a week. Everyone absorbs training differently, and therefore you need to do what is best for you. And it doesn't mean you're failing if you try something that doesn't work for you, but it works for someone else. It just means that you need to change up your training a little bit to see what works for you better.
Yeah, we're all an experiment of one. So I think that is, you know, that's really important. And again, for us as coaches, it's really important for us to remember when we have a runner, maybe they don't need 5 days a week of running. Maybe they can do 4 days a week. Maybe they don't need a long run of 20 miles. And maybe we can max out, we can do it by duration. Maybe, and I think that's why it's helpful to have somebody outside of your own, you know, outside of yourself, look at your training and say like, well, like, let's back up here and take out these preconceived notions of what needs to be done and figure out what for you individually, what has worked, what has not worked. And, you know, let's try something a little bit different and see. And it doesn't always work out. You know, it's not always, doesn't mean nobody ever gets injured or they always reach their potential every time, but it's that, again, I think it's that really important. It's hard for us as coaches when people come to us and say, well, why don't you have me doing 3 20 mile runs? Everyone else is doing 3 20 mile runs and they're doing them, you know, every week, or they're, you know, and you say, well, but for you, you've gotten injured when you've done that before. Now we're going to try maybe a 10 day cycle, or we're going to try cutting it down to 4 days a week of running and 1 day of cross training. And, you know, so I think, that's just another observation I had, is that everybody we work with is very different and individual. And, it's hard a lot of times to convince people that they don't have to do what is traditionally the kind of the standard, that they can still be successful.
Yeah, good point. And then another pattern that I've seen a lot over the years, I know you have too, is trying to squeeze in too much and then taking a big break in training. And I'm not talking about like if you get sick or injured, I'm just talking about like where you're running, you know, for 2 weeks and staying really consistent. And then you travel and you kind of stop running for a week or two, and then you try to jump back in. That unfortunately leads to injury. So we've seen a few runners over the years that it's, and this is not no shade, no shame or anything. It's just an observation where life just doesn't allow them to remain consistent, and that's okay. But that tells me that don't train right now. Instead, just run for stress. Because if you're trying to train for something and your life outside of running isn't allowing you to do so properly, that's going to lead to injury, even if you didn't exactly cause the injury, just by how you're leading your life. So if, for example, you're planning a wedding or and you're finding that you have to go out of town a lot, or if you are starting a new job and you have to travel a lot, take that time to just run for stress and don't worry about training for something. And then once that season has ended and your life is a little bit more predictable, then start thinking about what you want to train for. You are still a real runner, even if you're not training for anything. If you're just running to run, that still counts. And those cumulative miles will serve you well when you do decide to train for something. I feel like often we get into a position where someone will ask you right away, oh, you're running, what are you training for? And it's like, you don't have to train for anything. I know plenty of runners who run and have been running for years and years and years and never
train for life. Train for life. Right.
And that doesn't make you any less of a runner. So really thinking about what's going on in your life before deciding to undertake training. And then also recognizing that you're not a quitter if you decide to table your training because things have caused you to not be able to follow your training plan. That doesn't make you a quitter at all. It just means that right now it's not the season for you to train. It's a season for you to run.
So a good point. And I think the corollary just briefly to that is that consistency is key. And that's what we see with anybody and anyone's performance. And it doesn't even matter if you can't get in the speed workouts or you can't get in, you know, whatever. If you can be consistent, you can be successful. And that is where we have seen consistently over the last 14 years is that our runners are the most consistent, see the best results. And consistency means not being injured and not overdoing it and not getting to the point where you have to then take a ton of time off. And again, going back to what we talked about before, taking a few days off for being sick so that you can get back to it, that doesn't interrupt the consistency. It's like you said, kind of these having to take big chunks off. And if you do, that's fine. Just be realistic then and realize that you can't be consistent at this point. So maybe we have another goal other than, you know, performance related. It's like you said, for just stress relief or, but yes, consistency. I think that is definitely a trend that we have seen throughout all of our years of coaching, is that consistency is the most important factor and ingredient in success.
Yeah. And I would say lastly, and we talk about this a lot, it's worth repeating, the runners who don't identify by their race times are the most successful long-term.
And like the happiest. That's the most important.
That's the word.
Feel the best about happiest. Their running, right? Yes. Yeah, they feel the best. They're the ones that are most joyful about running.
Yes.
They're the ones.
Yes, it's hard to do. Look, I just, at the top of this podcast, I talked about, like, it's hard. You know, I'm in this place where I'm trying not to compare myself to where I was before. I'm living this. So I understand it firsthand how hard it is to sort of reframe your running and not think about your times as a reflection of your athleticism, but rather just race to the best you can and have fun doing it. Try your best, work hard, and see where it lands you. And we've talked about this before, coming to it from a place of curiosity, like, okay, I just completed this training cycle. It went really well. I am so curious to see how I'm going to do. I have some goals, so I know how to pace myself, but I am not going to go into this as if it's a test. And, you know, if I don't achieve a certain time, I failed the test, because you didn't fail. If you ran your race after a training cycle and you were able to enjoy the fruits of your labor, you passed. I mean, that's what it's all about. And no one cares about your times. We say this a lot. No one cares but you. You are not going to walk away from your running career and say, oh, yeah, that year when I only ran a 3:28 instead of my goal, which was a 3:21. No one cares.
You probably won't even remember.
No.
Right. Yes, no. Exactly. Very well said. Well, we've talked for a long time. So thank you to anyone who's stuck around to listen to us this long. And we just repeat that if you're listening to us and would like to talk to us about working with you heading into the spring for spring marathons, please reach out to us, Julie and Lisa at runfartherandfaster.com. We'll get back to you as soon as we can and set up a time to chat. So like we said, we can plan accordingly for our spring rosters.
All right. Well, Lisa, it was really nice catching up and chatting with you. I hope you have a great week, and we'll be off next week. So happy Thanksgiving. I'm very grateful for you, Lisa.
Grateful for you, Julie.
All right. See you in 2 weeks. Bye, Lisa.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryant. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others. And please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening and have a great week.